Okay, thank you. Thank you all very much. In addition to all the problems we just had, my internet connection died about 20 minutes ago for about 10 minutes, so I was getting a little bit more nervous. Anyway, we're going to have three shiurim, and tonight's shiur is probably going to be the most complex because we're going to study the two primary texts in the Gemara, Psachim and the Gemara in Shabbos. The second shiur will cover the primary machlokas around Zmanim that many of you know as the machlokas between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Gaonim as to when Shabbos starts and ends. And then the last shiur will be a review of all of the various times of the day, starting from the morning to the night, about 15 different Zmanim, and we will talk about all of the various interesting machlokas that come up during the day. And I am wondering whether I am still connected.
This is Bill, you're connected. I need to ask the Kahal to not play with the buttons, to change the screen size for everybody, and throw us all off. Please leave everything alone and enjoy the shiur.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyway, so let's start at the beginning. The topic of Zmanim covers fundamentally the two different meanings of the word yom. The word yom and the word day in English have two distinct meanings. We say yom Shabbat, yom Revi'i. Similarly in English, we say day of the week. You know, I'm going to see you someday next week. What we mean is we're referring to the 24-hour period that in the secular calendar begins and ends at midnight. Similarly, in the halacha, there is a beginning and an end to a day. In the secular world, when we say the day begins and ends at midnight, if you were to go outside 5 minutes before midnight, at midnight, and 5 minutes after midnight, you wouldn't notice anything changing. The sky would look the same 5 minutes before midnight, at midnight, and after midnight. And midnight is effectively a convention. It's entirely an artificial point at which, for reasons we have to have one, we decided that midnight is the point at which a certain day, Wednesday, turns into Thursday, Saturday turns into Sunday. With respect to the halacha, things are quite different. The transition point between days, between Shabbat and Yom Rishon, or between any day of the week and the subsequent day of the week, occurs approximately a half hour after sunset, at a point that many of you probably think of as the appearance of three stars. So if you ask the general person, when does the day of the week transition? They would probably say the day of the week transitions sometime after sunset at the point when three stars appear. Of course, that's not exactly what we say on in Bamei Madlikin on Erev Shabbos. We don't say, you know, Safek Tzeisa Kochavim or Safek three stars. We say Safek Chashecha, Safek Eino Chashecha. So there is an alternative point of view that the transition point between days of the week is not the transition defined by an appearance of, say, three stars, but some level of darkness. And this is a long-standing machlokes that has gone back literally over 1,000 years as to what is it that defines in halacha the transition between one day and the next. Is it the appearance of stars, Tzeisa Kochavim, specifically three stars or three medium stars, or is it some defined level of darkness? Now, later on, we're going to define exactly what that level of darkness might be, but practically, that machlokes, three stars, or chashecha, or darkness, however we'll define it precisely, turns out to be relatively close. In other words, the point at which three stars appears and the point at which it gets dark, however we define the term dark, and clearly we have to define that term very precisely, it turns out that this machlokes is of significant conceptual value, but it has minimal impact. As minimal impact in terms of the halacha, because the point of three stars and the point, as we will see, of chashecha are relatively similar. So that's the sugya in the Gemara in Shabbos, which we'll get to in a small number of minutes, and we'll discuss what the relationship is between various definitions of Shachashecha and the appearance of stars. And that's one definition of the word day. The other definition of the word day, again, just like Yom, is Yom versus Laila, day versus night. And there, the halacha deals with what is the daytime period versus what is the nighttime period. And here the halacha really has very little dispute, in fact, no dispute. The indisputable point at which the day begins in halacha is a point called Alot HaShachar. Now, for the moment, we're going to refine this definition a little bit as we go, but for the moment, think of Alot HaShachar as the first point in the morning when the sun has not yet risen. There's been no sunrise. The sun is still well below the horizon. However, the sun is getting close enough to the horizon that the sun's light begins to become barely apparent. So Alot HaShachar is this very first point in the morning, or if you'd like, when the light of the sun is beginning to become apparent. And that's this point called Alot HaShachar. Now, there are many, many controversies that some of you may be familiar with about how we calculate the various hours of the day. Many of you know about Sof Zman Kriyat Shema. Do we count from sunrise? Do we count from Alot HaShachar? Those machlokesin, I just lost my screen. Those machlokesin, I don't, sorry. Those machlokesin do not relate to the fundamental fact that as far as the beginning of the day, halachically, the beginning of the day is always thought of as Alot HaShachar. And what that means is that if you perform a bris after Alot HaShachar, you put on tefillin after Alot HaShachar, you blow shofar after Alot HaShachar, any mitzvah that you are required to do during the daytime period, doing it from Alot HaShachar on, at least from the point of view of being mekayim of the mitzvah, perhaps not lechatchila, perhaps only b'di'eved, but Alot HaShachar is the unquestioned beginning of the day. Now, if Alot HaShachar is the beginning of the day, the question you have to immediately ask is, what is the end of the day? So if the day begins at Alot HaShachar, logic says that the day begins at an equivalent point in the evening, as distant from sunset as Alot HaShachar is from sunrise. And interestingly, the Vilna Gaon gave that point in Halacha a name. He called it Tseis Kol HaKochavim, the point at which all the stars become apparent. Now, what he meant by that is the following. Let's deal with at night, because more of us are probably up at night at sunset than are up at sunrise. So when the sun sets, as soon as the sun sets, it is possible to see some small number of stars. Those are stars the Gemara refers to as large stars. What does the Gemara mean by large stars? It refers to large stars also as kolchavei lechem, the moving stars. We don't refer to those things as stars. We don't call them large stars. We don't call them moving stars. We tend to call them planets. So when the Gemara says kolchavei lechem, or large star, it's fair to think about that. The Gemara is referring to Venus or Mars or Saturn. It's referring to one of the planets. So as soon as the sun sets, in fact, sometimes a few minutes before sunset, there is beginning to be less and less illumination from the sun. And depending where in the sky these particular planets happen to be situated, you can occasionally see a very large star, i.e. a planet. Some number of minutes later, think about 5-10 minutes later, the first of the medium stars begins to become visible. In other words, the light of the sun has begun to decrease, so that stars that are always there, right, we just can't see them because the illumination of the sun is effectively making the stars invisible. The stars suddenly start becoming visible. One star becomes visible. 5 or 10 minutes later, a second star becomes visible. 5 minutes later, 2 minutes later, 4 minutes later, a third star becomes visible. And once the third star becomes visible, suddenly stars start becoming visible very, very rapidly. So the first couple of stars take some number of minutes to appear. The first star takes some number of minutes. The second star takes some number of minutes. The third star takes some number of minutes. And this, again, is very dependent on the season of the year, where you are on Earth. But it takes a while for three stars to become visible. Once three stars become visible, my screen again went weird. Once three stars become visible, many more stars become visible as well. When the sun gives us effectively no more illumination, if you'd like the counterpart to Alot HaShachar, it and the evening, the Gaon calls that Seis Kolakochovim, because now there is no light from the sun impairing visibility. So that point is called by the Gaon Seis Kolakochovim. The reason the Gaon is very insistent on doing that, this is obviously related to some of his arguments with others in the area of Zmanim, but understand that this definition of Alot HaShachar and its mated pair called Seis HaKochavim is not subject to debate. It's a simple fact. When there is no light at all from the sun, as many stars as you're going to be able to see are going to become visible. The point of Seis HaKochavim. In the morning, right before Alot HaShachar, the sky is full of stars. At the moment of Alot HaShachar, the amount of light from the sun begins to increase, and the number of stars that are visible begin to decrease. Now, the first question we're going to deal with is, when is Alot HaShachar? In other words, when is this point that Chazal referred to as Alot HaShachar? So there is a Gemara. The Gemara is in Pesachim. What you have on I'll bring it up now. You have the text that you can download and look at. We're not going to follow the text inside. You have the text of the Gemara someone is playing the screen again. I'm sorry. You have the text of the Gemara in Pesachim, and the text of the Gemara in Pesachim is the primary text that tells us, when is this point of Alot HaShachar? Now, the text in Pesachim begins with the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is on a totally different topic. The Mishnah is interested in determining how far is far. Now, what does it mean, how far is far? We all know that Erev Pesach, we're in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, you have to go to the Beis HaMikdash to bring a Karban Pesach. So the Mishnah is concerned with, if you're far away from the Beis HaMikdash, you don't have to travel to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah, in the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, is that far from the Beis HaMikdash means you can't get to the Beis HaMikdash in half a day. So in a six-hour period, let's say, according to most Rishonim, from Chatzos until the end of the day, so your obligation to bring the Karban Pesach begins at Chatzot. If you can't get to the Beis HaMikdash by the end of the day, then you are considered to be far away, and you're not obligated to go to Jerusalem to bring a Karban Pesach. And Rabbi Akiva tells us, if you'd like to know what is that distance of half a day from Jerusalem, he says it's the town of Modin. So if you are further than Jerusalem in any direction than the town of Modin, then you are not obligated to go to Jerusalem to bring a Karban Pesach. The Gemara starts out, and Ula, who is an Amora living, second generation Amora living in Eretz Yisrael, says, by the way, if you're interested, let me tell you where Modi'im is. Modi'im is 15 mil from Jerusalem. Now, a mil is a measure of distance. It's a Roman measure of distance. Chazal give the measure in terms of Amot, 2,000 Amot. They give the measure in terms of a Persian measure of distance, Parasang. So the distance of a mill, it will turn out, is not critical to us. On the sheet, I loaded up some sheets on the shiurim. On the sheets, there is a relatively modern attempt at estimating the length of a mill. If you go look in Steinsaltz, today's is Rabbi Steinsaltz's National Global Learning Day. If you look in his introduction to the Talmud, he will give you two of the more classic definitions of the length of a mill. The length of a mill is not of interest to us. What is of interest to us, which we'll get to very quickly, is how long does it take to walk a mill? So a mill, whatever it might be, it's more than a kilometer and less than a mile. We know that in half a day, you can walk 15 mil. 15 mil is the amount of distance that is covered in half a day. And that's what Ula says. And as far as the Mishnah is concerned, we're done. Rabbi Akiva said half a day away, the town of Modi'im. Ula tells us Modi'im is 15 mil from 15 mil from Yerushalayim. And as far as the Mishnah is concerned, the sugya is over. Now, Ula gets dragged into the sugya in a very interesting way. The Gemara tells us that Ula is consistent with two statements of Amoraim. The first statement is the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, and the second is the statement of Rava. So the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, with which Ula is consistent, is that a person walks 40 milin in one day. So Ula said you walk 15 million in half a day. The Gemara states that Ula is consistent with this statement of that Ula's statement is consistent with this statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Question is, well, wait a second, what does that mean? Ula said you walk 15 mil in half a day. Ostensibly, you're walking at the same pace all day. You walk 30 million in a whole day. How is that consistent with Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you walk 40 million? So the Gemara assumes that Ula, when he says 15 million, is talking about walking from the middle of the day until sunset. And Rabbi Yochanan, when Rabbi Yochanan is talking about walking 40 million, then he's talking about a different day. He's talking about the halachic day. So Rabbi Yochanan says, in the halachic day, which starts at Alot HaShachar, some amount of time before sunrise, ends at Seis Kol HaKolchavim, some amount of time after sunset, you walk 40 milin. So now the Gemara says, okay, if that's the case, then I must conclude that since the periods, again, from sunset until Seis Kol HaKolchavim, and from Alot HaShachar until sunrise are effectively mated pairs, I must walk the same distance in both of those intervals. I know the sum is 40. I know I walk 30 from sunrise to sunset. So I must walk 5 million from the time of Alot HaShachar until sunrise, and then 5 million again in the evening from sunset till Seis Kol HaKolchavim. And that's Ula consistent with the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. And then the Gemara says, and that's also consistent with the statement of Rava. And Rava tells us that Ove Horakia relates to the way the rabbis and their view of cosmology. That's really not of terrible interest. It's the thickness of the firmament. So Rava says that Ove Horakia, the Ove Horakia where the sun hides out, from the point that its light first becomes apparent until it actually rises. So it's somewhere stuck in the firmament. So the period of Ove Horakia is equal to, Rava says, 1/6 of the day. So now let's see if this all makes sense. 5 million is how much you walk from Alot HaShachar until sunrise. 30 is what you walk during the day. 5 divided by 30 is 1/6. So it appears that Ula is consistent with Rabbi Yochanan that you walk 40 milin during the day, the halachic day, and he's also consistent with Rava, who says that the amount that you walk during the interval from Alot HaShachar until sunrise is equal to 1/6 of the day. Now, if we were to try to conclude from that, just those lines of the Gemara, what would we conclude? Well, first thing we'd conclude is that you walk 30 milin during the day. This Gemara, all Rishonim, obviously this Gemara is talking about a day near the spring or the fall equinox. This is, you know, because clearly in the summer, where the day in the Middle East is about 14 hours long, you walk more distance you cover in 14 hours than you do in 12. In the winter, when the day is about 10 hours long, you walk less. So if the Gemara is telling you how far you walk in a day, it must be talking about the average day. Of course, as well, the Gemara is only talking about the Middle East, because all of these quantities that we're talking about are very much latitude and season dependent. So the Gemara fixes the season. The season is around Pesach and Sukkot near the equinox. And it fixes, and of course, the place is fixed. We're talking about the Middle East. So if you walk 30 milin during the day, then the day is 12 hours. 12 hours is 720 minutes. Divide 30 into 720, and you get the time to walk a mil as 720 divided by 30, 24 minutes. By the way, do a similar calculation. The amount of time between Alot HaShachar and sunrise is 5 times 24. 5 times 24 is 120, which is 2 hours. Just checking, 2 hours is 1/6 of a 12-hour day. So everything is very consistent. If this were the conclusion of the Gemara, we would say Alot HaShachar occurs 2 hours before sunrise. All the stars are visible 2 hours after sunset. The time to walk a mil, which is not that relevant to us immediately, but it's a number we might want to keep remembering, is 24 minutes. That's the initial part of the Gemara. Then the Gemara drops a bombshell and says, this is all great, but it ain't true. Because this statement about Ovi HaRakia being 1/6 of the day contradicts an uncontested statement of Atana. So here you have Amoraim, Ula, Rava, Rabbi Yochanan. Again, the only person who's actually being contradicted is Rava. So Rava says that Ovi HaRakia, this period from Alot HaShachar until sunrise, is 1/6 of the day. And the Gemara then quotes the Tana. The Tana is Rabbi Yehuda. Remember that name, because he is the most prominent Tana in this sugya. He is also the most prominent Tana in the sugya in Shabbos. He seems to be very attuned to what's going on around him in understanding the astronomy. So he says that Ovi HaRakia are 1/10 of the day. Now, that is a significant difference. You know, 1/10 and 1/6 are significantly different fractions. So now the question is, okay, so Ovi HaRakia, now the Gemara assumes Rava is wrong. The Gemara uses the term Tiyufta. Exactly what the Gemara thinks has been effectively wiped out, at the very least, Rava has been wiped out. In other words, this notion that the day is 1/6. Our text of the Gemara seems to wipe out a number of other conclusions. It is very clear, said by the Vilna Gaon in our Chaim 459, that the text of the Gemara that we have is quite corrupted. And other Rishonim undoubtedly had somewhat varying texts of the Gemara. So if you really wanted to understand exactly what was wiped out, let's say automatically 1/10 wipes out 1/6. Whatever else gets wiped out, if you read our text of the Gemara, it would appear that Ula is wiped out completely, which is kind of like he's kind of an accidental bystander. He just said some statement about Modim, and the Gemara drags him into a discussion about Rabbi Yochanan and Rava. So what is it about Rabbi Yehuda that sort of wipes out Ula? It's an interesting question. Our text of the Gemara, for whatever set of reasons, appears to say that Ula has been contradicted as well. But leave that aside. I noted in the sheets, you'll notice, there's a lot of textual issues relative to this Gemara, and we obviously don't have time to go through them. I noted one of them. You will notice on the sheet that I underlined a single letter. There's a vav that's underlined if you look carefully at the sheets. That's an example of a single letter added to our text, it's not in a lot of older texts of the Gemara, that dramatically biases or changes or helps elucidate. I don't know whether it's elucidate or bias or change. It certainly has an impact on how we understand the text. I just wanted to illustrate that this text is quite troublesome. But we're not going to worry about the text per se. We're going to worry about the conclusions from the text. And this is interesting, that despite the fact that the text is a little bit difficult to deal with, the conclusions of the text, with the exception of a very, very small number of people, the Rambam, the Bar Tanura, the Balatanya, probably the three most prominent, everyone else, literally everyone else, all other Rishonim, interpret the text regardless of difficulties with various lines in the text in one of two ways. And in fact, so what they're trying to figure out is, what does this one-tenth mean? So I'll tell you first the way most Rishonim. Now, I don't know if I should use the word most or almost all. This is a very large argument amongst Achronim. Personally, I'm of the opinion that this is the opinion of almost all Rishonim. To prove that requires a lot of analysis, but almost all Rishonim will say, read the text as follows. The text rejects 5, 30, and 5. And the text says, instead of reading 5, 30, and 5, the 40 mil that we still accept or walk during the halachic day consists of 4 mil in the morning, from Alot HaShachar until the beginning of the day, 32 mil, not 30, during the day, and 4 mil in the evening. So 4 plus 32 plus 4 get you back to 40, but you should all be saying, wait a second, 4 divided by, I understood before, 5 divided by 30 is 1/6. How did 4 divided by 32 become 1/10? 4 divided by 32 in Yiddish is an achtel. And in fact, in the modern world, we refer to this shita as the achtel shita, the eighth. It's called the Brisker achtel for reasons we won't go into. So how did an eighth become a tenth? And the answer is pretty straightforward. Many of you know that when Chazal particularly use fractions, they don't use fractions the way we do. Most prominently, when the Torah says, v'chamishiso, yosif alav, add a fifth, the Torah doesn't mean v'chamishiso, a fifth, the Torah means a fourth. So in a similar vein, though not identical, what 4, 32, 4 mean is the fraction 4, which is the amount that you walk from Alot HaShachar until sunrise, is divided by the sum of 4, 32, and 4, which is 40. So the fraction, 1/10, means something totally different. So the fraction that Rabbi Yehuda said that contradicts 1/6 is, in fact, if I were to use both fractions in a similar vein, or use them the way we use fractions, I would have restated Rabbi Yehuda as saying 1/8. That's the way, if you look at our text of Rashi on the Gemara, you're going to see that our text of Rashi has this explanation of the Gemara. And I think, again, it's an extremely interesting area to figure out what other Rishonim have this point of view. However, if you go now to the Shulchan Aruch, suddenly the Shulchan Aruch, quoting Rabbi Yisrael Ishulai in the Trumas Hadeshin, and perhaps other Rishonim, arguably, has a completely different interpretation of the Gemara. The Shulchan Aruch says, or implies, that the way this Gemara is to be read is not 4 mil in the morning, 32 during the day, and then from sunrise to sunset, and then 4 at night. It's to be read as 4 mil in the morning, from sunrise, from Alot HaShachar until sunrise, 40 mil during the day, not 30, not 32, 40, and then 4 again at night. Now, the advantage of that is that the fraction 1/10 has the identical semantics to the fraction 1/6. The problem with that is it completely changes the statement of Rabbi Yochanan from being a statement of how far you walk during the halachic day into a statement of how far you walk from sunrise to sunset. Now, so those are the two most prominent ways to learn this particular Gemara. Now, if you do the math on these two ways, you come to some conclusions. Let's take the 432-4 method first. So the 432-4 method says you walk 32 mil during a 720-minute daytime period. So divide 32 into 720, take out your calculators, that's 22.5 minutes. Okay, 22.5 minutes times 4, which is the number of million that you walk from Olot HaShachar until sunrise, that's 90 minutes. 90, exactly 1/8 of the daytime period. 90 minutes is 1/8 of a 12-hour period. So that's the shita of many, many, many Rishonim. The shita of the Shulchan Aruch, quoted in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Yisraelin, is that you walk 40 million during the day. So if you walk 40 million during the day, then 40 into 720 minutes, how long does it take you to walk a mil? 40 into 720, finally, after literally a half hour, we finally get to what all of you know, which is the time to walk a mil of 18 minutes, hence 18-minute matzahs. Everything that we seem to know around this 18 minutes comes from this third way after Ula. After Ula, after the way that most Rishonim learn the Gemara, we get to 18 minutes. Now, of course, now if you go to how long is it from Alot HaShachar until sunrise, and from sunset until Tzeisikol HaKachavim, you get 4 times 18, which is, again, the familiar 72 minutes. So it's taken us a half hour to get to something I suspect all of you knew walking in, that 72 minutes is some sort of a mystically important number. 18 is a very important number. But what I want to stress is that those two numbers are not necessarily the only ways to read this sugya. In fact, most Rishonim learn this sugya not with 72 and 18, but with 90 and 22.5. The other issue, which we just mentioned briefly, is how much of Ula does the Gemara deny? So if I were to go back, Ula says two practical things. He says that Alot HaShachar is 2 hours before sunrise. That comes from the 1/6. So that is certainly, there are no Rishonim, as far as I know, who maintain a 2-hour period. There is a long discussion as to whether the Baal HaTanya had such a point of view. I think it's absolutely not incorrect. So from my perspective, the Gemara clearly contradicts the 2 hours before sunrise point of Alot HaShachar. Less clear whether the Gemara contradicts Ula's 15 mil from Modi'in to Yerushalayim in half a day, which is the 24-minute interval of going for a mil. So one of the complex things is if you hold 24 minutes, what do you hold relative to 72 or 90? That's a complex problem. The primary opinion seems to be 72, because miraculously, 3 times 24 equals 72. So there's a large body of opinion that believes that the Rambam Shita, the Rambam clearly holds 24 minutes, and the Rambam clearly holds 72 minutes. So if you believe those two things about the Rambam, which a large number of people believe, not all, then you have to really reconstruct our Gemara, because our Gemara does not seem to ever deal with the number 3. It seems to deal with the number 4 and the number 5. So, again, that's all textual issues with the Gemara. But practically speaking, 120 minutes is effectively discarded by the Gemara. 72 or 90 remain the two shitos that are prevalent by poskim over the generations. And the time to walk a mil is, in fact, anywhere from 24 minutes down to 18 minutes. Okay, great. Now you ask yourself an interesting question. What does the science say? you were to go now to a scientist and say, I'm interested in knowing, in the Middle East, around this fall or spring equinox, when is light first apparent? I know when sunrise is, right? I know when sunset is. But now, please tell me, when is light first apparent? Now, the first time I believe that I've ever seen a major halachic authority deal with this question is Rav David Tzvi Hoffman. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman was told back a little over 100 years ago that light is apparent in the Middle East approximately 80 minutes before sunrise. And of course, you know, it couldn't be a better fit. The rabbis, the Rishonim, were arguing whether it's 72 or 90, and the science back 100 years ago confirmed that a scientific instrument, not the human eye, something a lot sharper than the human eye, is able to see light about 80 minutes before. Now, of course, we're now 100 years later. The instruments have gotten better. It's gotten, as high as 83 or 84 minutes. So it's creeping towards 90. But the question is, what does this confirm? So clearly, for those who hold 72 minutes and those who like 72 minutes, find this very comforting. Because if you ask a scientist, how much light is there at 72 minutes before sunrise in the Middle East around the equinox, they'll tell you that of the total amount of light that's going to be visible at sunrise, call that 100%. How much light is present at 72 minutes? It's roughly 1/6 of 1%. So 1/600th of the amount of light that's going to be present at sunrise is present 72 minutes before. And that is may very well correspond to what Chazal said to a human. We don't worry about minuscule quantities. So that's what 72 minutes. So 72 minutes is very much confirmed by the science, particularly if we say that we disregard minuscule quantities. The issue is, what about 90? 90 seems to be, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to argue that a human in the Middle East can see light before a scientific instrument. So the question is, what do we do with the vast number of Rishonim who hold 90 minutes? So there are two approaches. One approach basically says, all right, well, listen, I told you that Alot HaShachar means the first light of visible from the sun. Maybe when the sun enters Ovi HaRakia, its light is not immediately apparent. Maybe the light comes a few minutes later. And maybe this point of Alot HaShachar is a bit earlier than the first point of light. That's a little awkward to say that. But there's another point of view. The other point of view says, and this is a point of view that the Ravan mentions in a very different context, but I think this may answer the question pretty well. The Ravan says that when is the time, not when the light of the sun is first apparent, which is, say, for argument's sake, 80 minutes before sunrise, but when do people start their day in anticipation of light soon to become visible? So maybe Alot HaShachar is not, strictly speaking, the first light of day, but it's a point a few minutes before that when people get up, get ready to go do what they have to do, because they anticipate that the day is going to start. That's another point of view. What I find ironic is that in the last 40 or 50 years, there is a point of view held by a number of Haredim that say that, you know, this science contradicts what a large number of Rishonim. So therefore, they would argue, we are not allowed to rely on 90 minutes, even though it's the position of the Ramban and the Ritva and Rabbi Yaakov Reischer and the Chassam Sofer, all of those relatively important people, all absolutely argued strenuously against the Shulchan Aruch's view of 18 minutes. All of them argued strenuously for 90 minutes. So the view is, you know, maybe we can't rely on them, leheter. What's interesting is there's a very famous tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, written during the gas crisis, when people, you know, when they had real problems because it was in order to save daylight savings time extended further, and people had real difficulty of davening early. So Rav Moshe, of course, relied on this 90-minute zman, and Rav Moshe said that there is enough evidence of 90 minutes. He particularly quoted the Chak Yaakov and the Gra. Arguable whether that's the Gra's position. I think Rav Moshe was 100% correct, but that's certainly argued by a lot of Achronim. So Rav Moshe relied on this 90 minutes. But I find it ironic that in the modern day there are people trying to invalidate 90 minutes based on this little piece of science. But nonetheless, I suspect that this science is remarkably validating. So despite the fact that people may have a lot of problems with the cosmology of the rabbis as they talk about Ovi Horakia, the thickness of the firmament, and all of the rest, at the end of the day, the statement, regardless of whether you interpret it like most of the Rishonim or you interpret the Gemara like the Shulchan Aruch, is remarkably close to what we now know to be the observation of science in our day. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Now, that's the first sukkah. And honestly, I could argue we could spend an enormous amount of time trying to argue 90 versus 72 based on all sorts of factors. But now let's move to the second area. The second area is much, much more complicated, and what I'm going to do here is try to explain the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos is the basis of a very famous argument between the Gaonim and Rabbeinu Tam. And next week, we're going to read the Gemara according to the Rabbeinu Tam, and read the Gemara according to what I will call the popular version of the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, and the Gaonim. What we'll do today is read the Gemara a little bit more critically, consistent with the opinion, at least Rav Kapach's opinion, of the Rambam's view of the Gemara, which is frankly very different than the way the Gemara is normally read. And the Rambam's view of the Gemara, I believe, is very, very, very accurate, primarily because the Rambam, A, is known as a great astronomer, so you can really trust his observation of the heavens. And number two, Rambam was living in the Middle East. And this is very important, because what we'll find out eventually is that rabbis who were living in the 12th to 13th century in other parts of the world, there are certain elements of science that they simply didn't know. And when they read the Gemara, they were not aware of certain facts. And as a result, their reading of the Gemara, as we'll see, is somewhat suspect. On the other hand, Rav Sadji Gaon and the Rambam, a variety of Gaonim who lived, and Rishonim, who lived in close to the Middle East, in Egypt, like the Rambam lived, there's a little bit more credibility to their reading of the text. A, in the case of the Rambam, he lived in the Middle East. B, he was very, very, very familiar, as anyone who's learned Kiddush HaChodesh knows, with astronomy. Okay, so now, we're going to go to the Gemara in Shabbos. And the Gemara in Shabbos is, again, on your sheet. And I want to, before I start, I want to tell you three things. Because each of these three things bias the way most people read the Gemara in Shabbos. And I want to just you must be aware that all of us, we have certain natural biases that come about because we're living in the 20th century and we have an environment around us. So number one, if you asked an average person, in fact, any of us on this call, when does Shabbos start? I think almost all of you could probably raise your hands and all agree to this. Shabbos starts at sunset. What don't we know? Well, when does Shabbos end? Oh, my God. Every shul has its own little 42 minutes, 50 minutes, depression angles, 72 minutes. There are more opinions about when Shabbos ends than there probably are Jews. So, in our view, what's clear is when Shabbos begins, it's at sunset. What's arguable is when Shabbos ends. When you read the Gemara in Shabbos, it's very important to realize that the two major opinions around which the Gemara revolves, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, according to a majority of Rishonim, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda agree completely about when Shabbos ends. What they're arguing about is when Shabbos begins. Now, there's a third opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah. I happen to believe he also agrees with them as to when Shabbos ends. That's argued a little bit by Rishonim. There's another body of Rishonim. Let's say roughly 60% of Rishonim think that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda agree as to when Shabbos ends. There's a second opinion of Rishonim that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda disagree about the end of Shabbos. And the interval of time that Rabbi Yossi is later than Rabbi Yehuda is somewhere between 24 and 36 seconds. So let's just say in an era before clocks, it's pretty clear the Gemara has a very, very good idea about when Shabbos ends. What the Gemara does not know, and the focus of the Gemara, is not Saturday night. It's not when Shabbos ends. The focus of the Gemara is when does Ben HaShemashos begin. That's number one. Number two, when the Gemara discusses time, and there are a number of time equivalent statements in the Gemara, the time to walk 3/4 of a mil, or the time to walk a half a mil, there are a number of such statements in the Gemara. But understand that those are just conservative approximations that the Gemara is using. The primary way to read the sugya is not the way we do by looking at a watch or looking at time-based approximations. The sugya is all about observation of the heavens. So the Gemara is going to try to determine the end of Shabbos in terms of observation, the beginning of Ben HaShemashos in terms of observation. So the Gemara, we should not fixate on the few times the Gemara gives us a time-based measure. We should rather concentrate on what the Gemara concentrates on, which is observation, number two. Number three, observation of what? When you read the Gemara goes on for about a blot and a half. Until the very, very end of the sugya, there is not a single mention of stars. Stars is mentioned at the very end of the sugya by the most famous astronomer among Amoraim, who is Shmuel. Shmuel, at the end of the sugya, gives us a star-based sentence, which has to be very carefully analyzed. He summarizes something in terms of stars. The rest of the sugya, the machlokas tanoim in the sugya, the machlokas amoroim as to how to interpret the tanoim, all have to do with what we started out with, this notion of chashecha. So again, different from us. We know when Shabbos starts, we don't know when it ends. The Gemara kind of knows when it ends. It's arguing about when it starts. The Gemara is not that fixated on time. It's fixated on the observation of the skies. And finally, most of the Gemara is not talking about the observation of stars. Most of the Gemara is talking about the observation of darkness. So now let's very quickly look at the Gemara. There are four parts of the Gemara that we're going to look at. We're going to look at a Machlokas Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Nechemiah, and Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to look at a Machlokas between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef are Talmidim of Rav Yehuda, not Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Yehuda, who is a Talmud of Shmuel. So we're going to look at their argument about how to interpret Rabbi Yehuda. Next week, we're also going to look at an interesting conversation between Abaye and Rava, looking to the east and looking to the west. That's a very interesting conversation, which we'll leave for next week. And we're going to look at the last statement in the Gemara, which is the statement of Shmuel concerning stars. Now, what I'm going to do in order to compress time is I'm not going to go through this quite in the order the Gemara goes through it. I'm going to read the Amoraim into the Machlokas Tanoim. So the Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi, we'll start with Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is that Ben HaShemashos is Keheref Ayin. The length of Ben Hashmashos is very short, a blink of an eye. We can argue as to whether he means a couple of seconds or there is no Ben Hashmashos. My intuition is that what he's really saying is there is Chashecha. There is, as we say in Bamem Madlik in Friday night, Safik Chashecha. But in terms of a defined period of Ben Hashmashos, which precedes Chashecha, Rabbi Yossi negates that point of view. He says there is no such thing. Terrifying. So that's Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Leave that aside. The Gemara says that when Rabbi Yossi turns out to be a Chumra, we follow Rabbi Yossi. But with respect to Erev Shabbos, we don't follow Rabbi Yossi. We follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Nechemiah has the intermediate position between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. His view is that Ben Hashmashos is the time to walk half of a mil. Rabbi Yehuda, as we will see, his period of Ben Hashmashos is longer than that. It's either two-thirds or three-quarters. So let's concentrate only on Rabbi Yehuda, because the Gemara says that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and it's Rabbi Yehuda's time of Ben Hashmashos that we follow halachically. So the phrases of Rabbi Yehuda, there are four phrases that are critical in how Rabbi Yehuda describes the period of Ben Hashmashos. He starts out with a phrase that is probably the most argued phrase in the entire sugya. He says the phrase, Mi she'tishke hachama, when the sun has set. Now, I'm translating that with bias. In other words, I'm not saying that means sunset. There are a large number of people, particularly in the 20th century, that translate the word Mi she'tishke hachama as meaning sunset proper. The Ramban in Taras HaAdam, his commentary on Avelis, says very, very clearly, it's also extremely clear from the Rambam in Kiddush HaChodesh, that Misha Tishka HaChama does not mean sunset. It means some point after sunset. Now, I would argue as well, if I say to somebody, you know, come by after 4 o'clock, and they come by at 6:30, I don't think that's quite right. I meant come by after 4, 4:15, 4:20, 4:30. Whatever. So, Misha Tishka Achama probably refers to some point after sunset, but close to sunset. And at that point, Rabba says, Misha Tishka Achama is the beginning of Ben Hashmashos. Now, we have no idea what that point is. In the term Misha Tishka Achama, all we can say is at some point after sunset, we're not sure exactly when. Then Rabbi Yehuda adds another phrase. He says, "Kol zman shepnei mizrach ma'adinim." What that phrase means is the sun is setting in the west and is throwing light over to the eastern side of the horizon. So there is a point at which Ben Hashmashos has begun. It's some number of minutes after sunset. The sun is below the horizon. It's providing some amount of light. But that amount of light is beginning to dissipate. It's no longer bright. It's no longer very red. Whatever that might mean precisely, there is some period after sunset, and that period lasts approximately a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And when that period is over, Rabbi Yosef says, Ben Hashmashos begins. So Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef are arguing about not some point after sunset, when the sun's illumination begins to measurably weaken. So at that point, Rabba says the Ben Hashmashos starts a little before that, and Rabbi Yosef says it starts a little bit after that. It starts exactly at that point. Now, when is that? I can't tell you. Well, my intuition, 8 to 12 minutes after sunset. You can't be certain, because you really have to go out and observe. In Jerusalem, in the Middle East, when do you sense that the light of the sun, not in the west, in the west you can clearly see the sun 12, 15 minutes after sunset. It's very apparent that the sun is below the horizon. The question that what Rabbi Yehuda says is, when is that light coming from the west of such as minimized to the point when you don't feel a lot of that light apparent on the eastern horizon? That point is the beginning of Ben Hashmashos, according to Rabbi Yosef. A minute and a half or 2 minutes before that is the beginning of Banish Mushes, according to Rapa. When is that point? Not so clear. Then Rabbi Yehuda says, by the way, what does Banish Mushes look like? In other words, now Banish Mushes has started, and I want to tell you what you're going to see during Banish Mushes. So Rabbi Yehuda says, if you look to the eastern horizon, all the way down the other side of where the sun is, the sun's in the west, look at the eastern horizon. In the eastern horizon, it's dark. But when you look from the eastern horizon all the way up to the apex of the sky, you begin to see more and more light. And the apex of the sky, the highest point in the sky, is that during Bein HaShemashos is lighter than the eastern horizon. And then he says, at some point, the eastern horizon and the apex of the sky are going to be identically dark. Now, identically dark, don't take out your scientific instrument, just look at it. Take a look at when you think the northernmost point in the sky and the eastern horizon are roughly of the same level of darkness. That's, Rabbi Yehuda says, that's Laila. Shabbos is over. And that's the point that we say on in the Mamadlikin of Savik Hashecha. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And then Rabba and Rabbi Yosef tell us an approximation. Now they say, you know, I've told you, I say Ben Hashmasho starts a little bit before illumination goes down significantly. Rabbi Yosef says, I start Ben Hashmasho's when the illumination from the west has minimal impact in the east. When is that? So Rabbi Yosef says, my interval is two-thirds, the time to walk two-thirds of a mil before Hashecha. Rabba says, my interval is the time to walk three-quarters of a mil before Hashecha. The difference between two-thirds and three-quarters, the Gemara calls Palga de Danka, a half of a sixth. We know that as a twelfth. A twelfth of the time to walk a mil is between a minute and a half and 2 minutes, whether the time to walk a mil is 18 minutes or 24 minutes. So that's the sugya of the Gemara. And now, from that sugya, we have the best hint at when Ben Hashmasho starts, according to Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, is this point when the illumination from the sun in the west has diminished impact in the east. And you can try to estimate that. Clearly, reasonable people will disagree as to when that is. The other way to estimate it is to put a number on when the day is over. In other words, when is the point when the apex of the sky is as dark as the eastern horizon? When is this point of Hashecha? And then subtract from that point either the time to walk three-quarters of a mil or the time to walk two-thirds of a mil. And that gives you another method of perhaps estimating the beginning of Bein HaShemashos. The problem with that method is we get into a huge about when is this point that the apex of the sky is as dark as the eastern horizon. And that it turns out that that point depends on the season of the year. It is roughly between 20 and 27 minutes after sunset. The vast majority of opinion of people who have observed this carefully, the most important being Rabbi Chilmichel Tukachinsky, who was a Rav in Yerushalayim about 60 years ago, his observations are in a sefer called Bein HaShemashos, but then the question is, how long is a mil? 24 minutes, 22 and a half minutes, 18 minutes? Which are we talking about, the summer or the spring? So there is a fair amount of debate as to how you would apply the time in the Gemara of three-quarters or two-thirds of a mil subtracted from the end of Shabbos to determine the beginning of Bein HaShemashos. But clearly, to the Gemara, that was what the Amoraim were suggesting. If you know when the end of Shabbos is, I can give you a rough idea, not in terms of observation. The observation is, you know, Pnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, the light of the west, its impact on the east is beginning to reduce. I can give you a time-based measure. So both of those things tend to give you a measure. If you look at what most people would assume is the result of subtracting from kashecha, three-quarters or two-thirds of a mil, you can go try to figure out what the range is. It's a pretty wide range. But most people believe it's somewhere between 5 and 15 minutes after sunset. So far, we have two methods to determine the beginning of Bein HaShemashos. Exactly what does the Gemara mean by this rather enigmatic phrase, sometime after sunset? How much time is sometime after sunset? So Ma'adimim itself tends to drive you towards a range of, I would argue, between 8 and 12 minutes. The numbers provided by Rabba and Rabbi Yosef are less precise, because they may have been very precise to Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. The problem is that we living 1600 years later have a huge machlokas rishonim as to how long it takes to walk a mil. So we no longer know exactly what they were referring to. And we can't be certain, even though I could argue for a particular point, we don't know exactly what season of the year they're referring to. I happen to think they're referring to the summer, but that's an arguable point. So given the uncertainty as to what point they're referring to, given the uncertainty and the lack over the length of the mil, it's very difficult, just based on that, to conclude. I lost, okay. I'm sorry, I lost my screen. Okay, I'm sorry. So it's difficult to conclude. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I know we started about 5 minutes late, but we're going to end here. The one thing that we have not done, which is probably the most important line in the Gemara, which we'll start the next class with, is Shmuel. So this is the sugya. There's a lot of other text in Shabbos that we're not covering. The Machlokas Abaye V'Rava we'll deal with next week. At the very end of the sugya, Shmuel utters a one-line statement. He says, Kochav Echad Yom, one star day, Shtei Kochavim Bein HaShemashos, two stars Bein HaShemashos, three Kochavim Laila. And the question which has occupied almost everyone who studied this sugya is, what did Shmuel mean? Next week, I'm going to try to give you an explanation of Shmuel that is, I would argue, Shmuel is known in the Gemara as being Baki Bishvilei Derakia. He is the expert in astronomy among Amoraim. In this statement on Daf Lamed Hei Omed Beis is Shmuel's most important statement in all of Shas about astronomy. So here's the Amora, known as Baki Bishvila Derakia, the astronomer of note among Amoraim. And here is the one statement he makes that's probably the most impactful statement in terms of halacha. So I'm going to assume two things. A, the statement is non-trivial. He's telling us something that's significant. And number two, he's telling us something that's accurate. In other words, Shmuel is not just Kochav Echad Yom, Shtei Kochavim Bein HaShemashos, Three Kochavim Laila. There is something innately profound around what Shmuel is saying. And number two, more important than anything, what he's saying is correct. And what you will find if you read most of the attempts to deal with Shmuel, they fail one or the other sniff test. Either what he says is trivial, or what he says is incorrect. Now, the third approach is to effectively say that Shmuel is a non sequitur to the text. In other words, Shmuel's assertion does not tie to the rest of the text. That I think if you read the text, and you read that the entire text is about Amoraim, students, grandstudents, and great-grandstudents of Shmuel, debating how to be precise about the way the Gemara paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, and to then say that Shmuel is somehow not paskining like Rabbi Yehuda, to me is entirely illogical. So next week we're going to pick up with this statement of Shmuel, with the assumption that he is consistent with the rest of the text. He is giving us an insightful and accurate assessment of what the text is saying in terms of darkness. He is reformulating it in terms of stars. And we have to be very careful, because that's going to require that we know a little bit about what stars are apparent when, in what season in Jerusalem. And once we know that, we will then conclude that Shmuel's assessment of Kochav Echad Yom, Shtei Kochavim Bein Hashmashos, three Kochavim Laila, helps us immensely in isolating this point of the beginning of Bein Hashmashos. Okay, that's it for tonight. For those of you who would like, who go on to the pod, you will have, this shiur is written out in about 6 or 7 pages, and next week's shiur is written out in about 5 pages, and I do apologize for all of the difficulty in getting started. And I hopefully next week, if you look at... you look at the pod, you'll be able to take a look at a variety of this week's, next week's, and the following week's shiur. Next week's shiur is probably the most controversial. To be fair, what I showed you tonight, if I were to summarize it, we did not get to Shmuel, which frankly is, I think, the most interesting part of the whole discussion. Shmuel's statement and the accuracy of Rabbi Yehuda about Ovi HaRikia are really, in my mind, they're incredibly confirming of the fact that Chazal did not just look in and learn Gemara. These halachot are very much based on observation. And certainly Rabbi Yehuda, who plays a prominent role in this sugya, as well as the sugya in Psachim, as well as Shmuel, did an incredible job at observation, and the translation of that observation into halacha. And, to me, this is, for those who argue a lot of people tend to concentrate on what the Gemara gets wrong in terms of its cosmology. And I know that. We all know there are many, many, you can read the Gemara in Psachim, and you can have a field day with the number of things that the Gemara does not get right. What is most important is that Shmuel in this sugya and the sugya in Psachim get the fundamental halacha absolutely correct. Now, next week, unfortunately, we're going to be dealing with how other people interpret the Gemara in Shabbos. And then suddenly we're going to deal with the fact that this knowledge of science and this knowledge of astronomy that was certainly held by the major figures in the sugyas we're talking about was not something that one can naturally assume throughout the period of the Rishonim. And what we will see next week is that some of the opinions of the Rishonim are in fact contradictory to some of the scientific observations. Okay, that's it for tonight. I'll stay on if there are any questions. Mark, I see you're raising your hand. Questions. Abe is right. Oh, I'm sorry. So those of you who'd like and download the first and second and third shiur, we are going to start next week at the very end of the first shiur, talking about the opinion of Shmuel. If any of you feel more comfortable talking as opposed to typing, feel free. Okay, Yisrael asks, could you define Bein HaShemashos? Bein HaShemashos is, there is a very large conceptual disagreement among poskim as to what ben hashmashos means. And the basically, is ben hashmashos a period of day and night? Clearly, ben hashmashos is a period that precedes chashecha. Clearly, ben hashmashos is a period that the rabbis ordained. In other words, ben hashmashos, in terms of Torah law, the only thing in the Torah is chashecha. There's a point of darkness, and there is a point of safek, the araisa, safek chashecha. And safek chashecha occurs a little bit, you know, so on Shabbos night, you're not going to end Shabbos at exactly chashecha, because we don't know exactly when that is. So you're going to wait a little bit longer. You're going to have safek chashecha Friday night, and you're going to have safek chashecha Saturday night, so Shabbos will get to be a little bit longer than 24 hours. In addition to that, the Rabbanon instituted a period of Ben Hashmashos, and there is a significant amount of controversy among Rishonim, and certainly in the 20th century, among the conceptual Brisker, there is a huge amount of Torah as to whether or not Ben Hashmashos is to be thought of as some irvuvia, some combined period that has characteristics of day and night, lahalacha, or there is a transition point somewhere in Ben Hashmashos between day and night. I think most people think of it as a rabbinically ordained period of approximately, we'll say, time to walk 3/4 mil, 13 and a half minutes, that precedes Chashecha. That is a rabbinic period that we no longer treat it as the previous day, but we do not fully treat it as the next day. So again, I can send you, I can refer you to a long article of mine on what Ben Hashmashos is. The conclusion of that article is that the theoretical conversation around what Ben Hashmashos is and the practical conversation of exactly when it is are not related. In other words, regardless of how I conceive of Ben Hashmashos, I have a variety of ways of answering the question of when is it. So the when is it question and the what is it question are, oh no, the Ben Hashmashos, I would argue, is completely rabbinic. One of the things you have to realize, and I didn't mention this, you have to look at the rabbinic literature and take a look at when the term Ben Hashmashos first shows up. It doesn't show up among early Tanoim. The term Ben Hashmashos is really Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Nechemia, who are students a generation and a half after Rabbi Akiva. So it's difficult to imagine that a phrase that for the most part shows up in the literature in the second century is biblical. So the period of Ben Hashmashos, and that's why during the period of Ben Hashmashos, we are very makil with respect to a variety of things. So during Ben Hashmashos, we allow a Mir Lakum, we allow a variety of Isurei Drabbanon do not apply during Ben Hashmashos. The reason is that the period of Ben Hashmashos is treated almost always in the halacha as if it were of rabbinic origin. Now, is that position universally held? No. But I think it's fair to read the Gemara that way, that Ben Hashmashos is different than Safek Chashecha. Safek Chashecha, which we say in Bamei Madlikin, is a Safek D'Oraisa. So in a period of Safek D'Oraisa, we behave very differently. Okay, Jack asks a good question. This notion of Tzeis Kol HaKochavim, nobody used the term. The term of Tzeis Kol HaKochavim, there are student notes from students of Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon. And if you look at his student notes, now that's not quite the works of Rishon, but in the Cairo Geniza, we have the remnants of notes from Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, from one of his students. And in those notes, it's very clear, at least to me, that the student was dealing with something like Tzeis Kol HaKochavim. The phrase itself, the Gaon introduced it. The reason the Gaon introduced it, you'll see next week. Because by the time the Gaon came on the scene at the end of the 18th century, we had lived through about 600 years of significant confusion. And the Gaon and the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, you cannot imagine how, violent they were to try to correct Jewish practice. In other words, by the time they came on the scene, we'll see this next week, people had read this Gemara so differently than the way I just read it, and so differently than the way the Gaonim read it, so differently than the way Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi thought it should be read, so differently from the way the Gaon thought it should be read, that they decided that it's really, really important to correct what had become, from their perspective, an error in the way the halacha was being conceived of. So among the things the Gaon did to explain that is he used this term, Tzeis Kol HaKochavim. Ah, Bill Weiss, yes, you ask a very, that is a, okay. So one of the things I don't want to do is paskin halacha. One of the great questions that comes up, it came up a few weeks ago, one of your local Toronto rabbis issued a psak about, forget about Pidyon HaBen, what about a baby born a few minutes after Ben HaShmashos, when do you do the bris? And that's a, we'll talk about that next week. That's an extremely interesting question. We in the modern day, for reasons I personally believe because we're sunset fixated, we tend to think if you were born a second or two after sunset, your bris is, let's say, Wednesday sunset at 6 o'clock, and a baby is born 6:02, the bris is on Thursday. That's the question you're asking. I'm not a rabbi, and I'm not here to paskin. But I believe completely that is not correct. I believe that, and it's not just a question of me, I'll tell you this next week, many, many great poskim, including probably most important, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who was the Vilner Gaon's primary student, did not believe that sunset was the precise point of transition, the beginning of Ben HaShmashos. So you're asking an extremely, a question about which rabbis in the modern day argue a great deal. You should know, Reb Moshe Feinstein paskin that a baby born up till 9 minutes after sunset has his bris on the preceding day. And that psak of Reb Moshe, which is in writing, and given the controversy about this, there are people that argue that maybe he wasn't serious, or maybe he changed his mind, or maybe he whatever. But if you read Reb Moshe's psak, Reb Moshe was, I would say, dead serious about that psak. And I believe that many great rabbis before him paskin that way. Ben Ishchai, Rav Shmuel Salant. See, one of the problems is we don't have, from the earlier points in history, from the 17th century and prior to the 17th century, and barely from the 18th century, we have very few tshuvot of rabbis that are that precise on a clock. And there's a very obvious reason, right? Their clocks weren't that precise. So it would be very difficult for a rabbi to give a very precise psak in terms of an instrument that they didn't trust. So you don't really have the type of ability to ask precise questions. That level of precision began probably sometime in the 19th century. And there's starting then, especially in the Middle East. Again, I bias towards the Middle East because rabbis in the Middle East did not have to deal with understanding what the difference between Europe and Northern Europe in the Middle East. So rabbis living in Northern Europe, if they did not have a very good understanding of the science, had a tendency to go l'chumra. Rabbis living in the Middle East who didn't need that understanding. In other words, they can use the text of the Gemara. They can use the text of the Rambam. They didn't have to worry about a scientific level of knowledge in addition to a halachic one. They tended to be more liberal relative to that question. So you'll find, I'll tell you a few interesting things about that next week.